And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have Kristen Harvey. She is the Executive Director of the Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Let's get started. For someone who is not familiar with the DDC, do you want to just give us that overview of what the council is?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you asked, because the council does so much great work and not enough folks are aware of what the council does. So our Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council is one of 55 developmental disabilities council. Every state and U.S. territory has one. So we were established 50 years ago by the federal DD Act, the Developmental Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights Act. And the reason that this was established is folks with developmental disabilities were very underrepresented in disability services. So some folks ask us, you know, what is a developmental disability? So a developmental disability is something that occurs before the age of 22. And it is likely to impact at least three areas, activities of daily living, like self-care, understanding language, learning, mobility, like walking or dancing, moving your body independently, self-direction, are you able to make your own decisions? Some examples of a developmental disability include, but aren't limited to, things like autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, Prader-Willi syndrome, the list goes on. As far as what the council does, so we're the glue that brings together the disability community here in Delaware. It's our job to have our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the developmental disabilities community here in Delaware. We identify needs, we reach out, we bring people together to talk, and we bring them together in the hopes that we're going to promote and embrace full inclusion, true inclusion of everyone in the community. Some ways we do that, we fund projects. So you're familiar with our Down syndrome and Alzheimer's public awareness campaign, but we do other projects as well, such as the annual LIFE conference, which brings together 500 people every year to talk about disability related issues. We do our Partners in Policymaking program, which is an immersive program where we train advocates on how to strengthen their advocacy skills and really speak up for what it is that they need. We're very involved in doing public awareness and providing community resources.
Wow. I've talked to so many councils, but that was the first time anyone has ever said, we're the glue that holds these other things together. So really, when you look at the services and the providers here in the state, there's somebody there who can wrangle and say, we have a common direction.
Yes. Yes. So we don't provide direct services, but we are the glue. We're the ones who know where the services are. We're the ones who hold agencies accountable when we receive those phone calls that say, hey, my child's individualized education program, IEP, hasn't been implemented. They're not receiving their special education services. We're able to pick up the phone, reach out to an agency and say, hey, did you know this is occurring out in the community? Did you know that this is the experience people are having? And is that what you really want out there? So we're able to resolve those types of things. People reach out to us kind of as the lighthouse. We're sending out the beam that says, hey, here we are. We have all of these resources. We have people here who want to help.
From what you're saying, obviously, no one stands alone in this. For someone with a disability, there are parents, there are siblings, and it rolls out into the community, teachers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How many families or how many individuals would you say you're serving or are served each year?
So while we don't provide direct services, and to get a kind of wrap your arms around how many individuals with developmental disabilities actually receive services, the Division of Developmental Disabilities Services would have that data. But I can tell you that approximately 16% of Delaware's population are people with disabilities, and then 1.8% of that number would be people with developmental disabilities.
Wow. That's, we're looking at large numbers. Laura Graham was on from Classy a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
I know, don't you just love her? And we were talking.
She's great.
I love everybody at Classy, the Community Legal Services. And we were talking about, on that day, special education. And we were talking about directed education plans and all of this. And it seems like when you have a developmental disability, you are kind of in your own little lifeboat and you got to paddle yourselves along. It's sort of an isolating situation because you are having to go out and seek and find the best education. You have to plan differently for your children. And do you want to jump in there, wrestle this to the ground and chat here?
No, I think you will never have to promote me to talk, especially about things like this. It is very isolating. So many parents of folks with developmental disabilities, when they're handed this brand new, beautiful baby, the doctors proceed to tell them all of the things that they will never do. And that is the wrong approach. That's absolutely the wrong approach. You say, here is this beautiful baby. Here is something that that your child has. And here's the tools and the resources that they're going to need to live their best life. And they can do it. And the more support that they receive and encouragement, the more likely they will be to do it. People with disability is natural. It says that even in our founding document, Congress finds that disability is a natural part of life. We're not all going to be as spry as we are right now forever. So it would behoove everyone really to think about things like inclusive design, reducing social isolation, access to healthcare facilities. Am I going to be able to get in the front door with a wheelchair? Can someone understand me? How will I make myself known if my speech might become a little bit garbled? Does that mean what I have to say is less important? Not at all. Not at all. We just need to learn to see individuals for who they are and meet them where they are.
We're talking here about inclusion. What do you consider to be inclusion? And then we're looking at inclusion in education, but then also in employment and housing and going on through all aspects of a life that you would expect at birth.
You're exactly right. So inclusion to me is, it's really this simple. There is no us and them. There's us, the human race. We are in this together, you know, as I said earlier, we're not always going to be able-bodied and able to just go around and do everything that we need to do. To me, an inclusive society is looking at how do we make sure that every single one of us can have access to employment, can have access to education, can get in the front door of a doctor's office or someone's home. How do we it's almost like a paradigm shift, but it's brilliantly simple, really. Just people with disabilities are people. They're US citizens, they're citizens of the world, right? So they need the same accessibility and the same consideration and respect as every one of their fellow humans.
You have in your mission statement talking about protecting the rights and the responsibilities of an individual with a developmental disability. So is the opportunity out there? And who's charged with opening the doors to say, hey, we want you to have a job. I want you to pay taxes ultimately and self-care and to be able to do what you can for yourself and for the rest of us?
Right. So that's a great question. And so that's kind of where the council comes in. People can't be connected to services that they don't know about. And you don't know what you don't know. Right. So it's kind of our job to reach out that hand and say, hey, disability community, we're here. Come talk to us about your life experience. What's going well? What's not going so well? And filling in those gaps. It's all about filling in those gaps of where you want to be and where you are right now. And we're here to help guide that experience. The amount of service agencies and service providers and laws can be truly bewildering to anyone. And that's why we're here. We're here to help guide the way and reassure and make sure that things are done the way that they should be.
I can almost hear when you said the part about you're in the hospital, you're handed a baby, a beautiful little baby, and you said, oh, here's all the things that he or she cannot do. When do you step in? I mean, when do agencies begin working with families? Is it from birth on?
It should be. It absolutely should be. So birth to three here in Delaware and Child Development Watch are charged with doing screenings of, I believe it's birth to, well, it's birth to age three. Age three is typically when kiddos, they make their transition to school, big kid school. And a lot of kids tend to fall off the cliff there in between preschool and elementary school. So Child Development Watch does a great job in helping be sure that kids are meeting their development milestones and providing appropriate interventions where need be.
But a lot of kids don't present issues or they until they miss some kind of a milestone. And that's got to be a major problem, because even I know, and I don't have kids, I know that those early years really set you up for a lifetime of success. Whatever path you're going to make, it's in that time. And so many children then miss out on early intervention.
You're exactly right. You cannot get that time back between a birth and three. But just because a child is diagnosed late doesn't necessarily, well, it doesn't mean at all that they're not able to catch up and to be supported and to still live an independent and a full life. It's very important for early intervention and identification. And that's where pediatricians are especially important, to be on the lookout for some of those signs, some of the early signs. And it's also important for folks to understand the often bewildering landscape of Medicaid and health insurance, what they will and will not cover, why, what different types of evaluations a child might need to get their services. Again, that's why council is here. We have folks with lived experience. We have 22 council members with huge hearts and a wealth of experience. Laura Waterland of Classy actually is one of our council members. But the majority of our members are people with disabilities. That's required by law. And we're here. We're here. We're just waiting for Avengers Assemble. Just call on us and we will find someone who can have the answer for you.
And you are easy to find. If you're looking for the Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council, you find them at ddc.delaware.gov. That's ddc.delaware.gov. If you're just tuning in, I'm Laura Lewis. You're listening to Focus on the Delaware Valley. And we are talking to the executive director of the Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council, Kristen Harvey. I know that this is one community, and it's driven a lot by the parents of children with autism, that this is a peer-driven campaign. Parents and guardians, they have to do, as I alluded to before, a lot of work on their own to find or create the services that their children need. And you have initiatives that you work on. But before I do get into the one that you're working on right now, the Down syndrome and Alzheimer's advocacy, because you mentioned Medicare and what will be paid for, insurance plans. Do you have to do a lot of work beyond this education kind of work that you're doing today?
Oh, definitely. I mean, every day our phone rings with folks who have questions or who are seeking guidance on navigating the very choppy waters of health insurance and what is and isn't covered. And also navigating, I find that a lot of folks who reach out to us aren't aware of all the rights that they have. These are civil rights. Disability rights are civil rights. And they're protected and set forth by things such as our guiding statute, the DD Act, as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act. So, you know, contacting us might be the first step on the journey, but we're going to connect you, and we're going to walk with you along the way.
You have the Life Conference. Is a lot of your work bringing peers together and pooling resources, information, bringing in those who are living the experience and sharing details?
Yes. I mean, this is, again, I'll say it, this is Delaware. You can drive from one end to the other in 2 hours. Everyone knows each other. There need to be more mentorship networks. People need to be brought together and aware of what is going on. The DDC is starting a new initiative, a new podcast and series on our YouTube channel called Advocates of the Roundtable. Look for that in the coming days. And that's going to bring together both people who provide services, individuals with developmental disabilities, and their parents and families. And we would also love it if some policymakers could join us and hear firsthand the stories that are going on. People can't do something about something they don't know about. So that's the first step, is having these candid conversations, or courageous conversations, as I call them, with what's going well, what's not going well, and identifying what that need is. So yes, much of the work that we do is bringing people together, sharing information and resources, amplifying existing resources, training people, educating policymakers, educating people with disabilities and their families.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the Life Conference?
Oh, sure. So the Life Conference, typically in a non-COVID world, would take place every January at Dover Downs Hotel and Conference Center. Of course, due to the coronavirus and the fact that a lot of people with disabilities have compromised immune systems, it did not seem responsible to do that this January. So we have postponed the conference until September. But LIFE stands for Legislation, Independence through Assistive Technology, Family, and Education. And we bring together speakers from around the country to come and provide information and resources for families, professionals, and individuals with disabilities. It provides a great networking opportunity. And we also have about 86 exhibitors at last count who come and talk about their services and products and ways that they can help. So it's a great event. We call it around our office, it's like old home week, you know, it's like homecoming. Everybody comes together and it's really great to see everyone at the same time. So while we will miss that this January, it's the responsible thing to do.
Well, you brought up the C word, COVID.
Yes.
How are people adapting? Because here you've got children who are missing out on really vital therapy or one-on-one interaction and the special assistance that and accommodations that they would have if they were in the classroom.
You are so right. COVID has hit the disability community like a sledgehammer. Not just with students with disabilities, but older folks. You know, the majority of people with disabilities live at home in Delaware. But allowing a personal care attendant into your home who maybe works at several other different locations and may or may not wear a mask, you're putting your health and your life at risk. Even going to the doctor or accessing telemedicine is an insurmountable challenge if you don't have access to technology that works for you. So a laptop, we just turn it on and fire it up. But what if you need speech to text and you don't have access to that? Your lifeline to the outside world has just been cut. And COVID has really writ large all of the existing inequities and challenges in America for people with disabilities. And I think if there's any silver lining to this, it's that more people are made aware of exactly how challenging it is so that we can start to have more concrete conversations and say, this is what's happening. This isn't okay. These are some lived experience stories. How are we going to fix this? That's if there's any silver lining to this. But something else that I always like to say about people with disabilities and their families, people with disabilities are the original innovators. They are innovators because they've had to be. They have had to adapt to a world that was not made for them. It is not friendly to them. It is not always accepting or welcoming. So in a way, people with disabilities are kind of saying to the rest of the world, you know, hey, cry me a river. I've been living this my whole life. And you know, get in line. You know, they're the original innovators.
Speaking of I've lived this my whole life, and for someone with a disability, they are looking at a life that goes beyond childhood. And I mentioned jobs, but you just said live at home. Planning for the future for someone with a developmental disability and housing is critical. This is a major part of every family's fears and worries and concerns.
You're exactly right. And that is where, you know, the council believes that every person can live in the community with varying degrees of home and community-based services, that people deserve the dignity of risk. They deserve, there's no need to keep them in a little padded, comfy cell for their whole lives. Give them the support that they need to move out and live the life they want in the community. And of course, things that will help with that are continuing to fund home and community-based services that allow people to live independently at home with drop-in services and supports, to allow people with disabilities to make a living wage. It's still legal to pay people sub-minimum wage here in Delaware. People make as little as 27 cents an hour just because they have a disability, but we expect them to be independent and pay rent.
But
there are a lot of things that need to change to support that ability. And it is absolutely there. It's absolutely there. We just have to get on. We have to get on the bus and do what we need to do.
But I interrupted you. But the system itself is kind of geared towards keeping them poor, because if
yes.
you make too much money, bye-bye to the services that they need to allow them to make that money.
You are so right. You have hit the nail on the head. There are income eligibility requirements for life-sustaining services. They don't call them a lifeline for nothing. Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, all of those have income limits. Something that has helped with that somewhat is the enactment of ABLE accounts, A-B-L-E, and it stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience. And ABLE accounts, which you can find more information about on the treasurer's office here in Delaware, allow people with disabilities to have more money on hand in an account than, and it is exempt from those income requirements for Medicaid and ABLE. So it lets people do things like save for college, save for a future life, save for a car, buy groceries. They really are a wonderful opportunity.
But people wouldn't know about them without the council.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. That's why we need the advocates of the roundtable to convene. Mm-hmm.
So let's, in our waning moments, let's talk now about another initiative that also plays into the idea of aging with a disability. Mm-hmm. You've got an initiative right now about Down syndrome and its relationship to Alzheimer's.
Yes. So council identified about 5 years ago, we noticed an emerging trend, which that's something else councils are charged with doing is noticing really which way the wind is blowing and what are we seeing more and more of as an emerging issue. And something that not many people know at all is that individuals with Down syndrome are almost 100% likely to develop early onset Alzheimer's disease. And as sobering as that is, the council feels it's very important that people know, people with Down syndrome, families of people with Down syndrome, know that this is a possibility so that they can begin to plan. And that looks like putting things in place for financial security, maybe housing modifications, care. It impacts the entire family when someone has Alzheimer's or another related dementia. Something else that a lot of clinicians aren't aware of is that Alzheimer's doesn't always present the same way in individuals with Down syndrome. So we get what's called diagnostic overshadowing, where a family or a caregiver will go and bring their child to their doctor and say, you know, look, we're seeing all these, they just, something doesn't seem right. And the physician will say, well, that's because of the disability. It's because of the Down syndrome. And that's not always the case. You just have to look a little bit harder sometimes with someone with Down syndrome or another cognitive disability. So some things that we've found from our friends across the pond in the UK are actually really ahead of us on these developing diagnostic screening tools. So things like sleep pattern changes, changes in mood, sudden avoidance of things such as the bathroom, the toilet, believe it or not. people who develop Alzheimer's often struggle with depth perception. So something like a step or a toilet bowl can look like a canyon to them. And so someone might react with new fear to something that that seems completely benign.
So adding more worries to the parents.
I know, right? We're not here to spread doom and gloom. And it's not a foregone conclusion. It's not. But we want people to be aware, because there is new research. There's new science coming out with medications that can slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. And early intervention, as with childhood, with Alzheimer's, matters. It matters in quality of life and time to plan. It's not a cheery thought, but forewarned is forearmed, and at least people can start to make plans.
So really, this is just a more intensified version of what the council and its partners are doing all along, and that is working towards medical support, financial planning, preparation, and legal. And all of these are resources that you sort of marshal and corral and explain when we go to your website. Resources and how do we use your website?
So we are actually revamping our website as we speak to become more linguistically accessible and accessible to people with cognitive disabilities, and working to make our information more in plain language that anyone can understand rather than clinical speak. So ddc.delaware.gov, you can read anything from who our council members are to legislation that we've provided comment on to blog posts. You can visit our YouTube channel. All of this links from the website. Follow us on social media. We're frequent posters. We respond to comments, and just kind of keep up with what's going on with us. We meet every month except July and December. So the public is welcome at any time to attend our meetings. Of course, we're meeting via Zoom right now, but come see what we're about.
And of course, for more information, everything that we have talked about today, ddc.delaware.gov. And that's for the Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council, ddc.delaware.gov. And wherever you may be hearing this, as she mentioned, every state does have a council. But for Delaware, ddc.delaware.gov for the Delaware Developmental Disabilities Council. My guest today, its executive director, Kristen Harvey. Kristen, thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, you are welcome back. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.